Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
Here we are again. How incredible. God is so amazing that He makes sure once a week there's a time that we're going to spend together. That's what a loving father and a caring father does. And so we ought to be able to want to honor Him. We don't want to curse father or mother. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, because remember, that is not just extended to your father and mother. That's to our Heavenly Father, and to the mother would be His Word. And so we curse that, ultimately we're put to death. As a matter of fact, we're going to learn today that when there's dishonor to the father, natural father, the child's to be burned. That's how serious this matter is. This is serious business. If you want to serve God, you got to understand everything He went through to make sure that He establishes a right passage for us, and we all need it. There's not a person that ever was alive that didn't need this passage. I'm going to prove it to you how we all need it. Go to Romans 5. Because this is going to be our start, so we got to establish some fundamental scripture concerning what we'll be talking about here in this Torah portion. Torah portion number 30. 31 and more. Romans 5. Usually I don't start like this, but before I left to come home, before I left home to come here, so it just, this Romans 5, I read through it. I just sat down. I said, I got 10 minutes. Let me read through it. And it's a starter. There's no doubt. You gotta look at Romans 5. Because without this, we won't know the seriousness behind how we spiritually apply Leviticus 21 in our life. We won't know. Because on all accounts, in the natural, it's directed to the priest. But in the spiritual realm, remember duality? You got to look at that all through Scripture, because He don't just say one thing to one group. It always has a reason behind why He's saying it. Because God don't just talk to have words to say. When He expresses Himself, it's all life in it. Anything God says is all about how to produce life. Why do we need life produced? Because life was taken. From whom? Every one of you sitting here. Because I don't know if you notice, we're aging. We're aging and we're dying every day. And I don't know if you noticed, the world's also dying every day. Every day the world's dying. And there's a reason behind it. But God's trying to bring life back to it. He wants to put life in it. And it's His Ruach HaKodesh that breathes life in the thing. There's no life there, but He can breathe life into us. But we got to embrace what He's done. And there's only one way you can have the Ruach HaKodesh breathe into you again. And Romans 5 kind of points it out for us. So let's look at it together. Romans 5 verse 1. Therefore, having been declared right by belief or faith, we have peace with Elohim through our Master Yeshua Messiah. How do we get peace with Elohim? Through our Master Yeshua Messiah. There's no peace with Elohim unless you go through Yeshua Messiah. Why? Because you're dying. And death is an abomination to God. How can you have peace with God when you're an abomination to Him? So you have to get life in you. How do you get life in you? You get peace through Yeshua Messiah. Is it critical that we accept Yeshua Messiah? You better believe it is. Verse number 2, through whom also we have access by faith or belief into His favor in which we stand. We have access to favor or grace by which we stand. And we exalt in the expectation of the esteem of Elohim. The glory, speaking of the esteem is the word glory. We exalt in the expectation of the esteem of Elohim, because that's the goal. Everybody say the goal. The goal is we get back the glory. Well, if we undermine in His glory, you're never getting the glory that you once had in Adam. We're not going to get it. Now, Yeshua got it back. How did He get it back? When He rose from the dead. He raised him far above all principalities, powers, might, and dominion, every name that's named. He is highly exalted. So when you speak of Yeshua, speak of him as he's highly exalted. Not just exalted, highly exalted. Is there any other person that's ever lived as highly exalted as Yeshua? We don't read it nowhere. Nowhere do we read it. Moshe was a great guy, but he's not highly exalted. He got to be raised from the dead still. Yeshua was highly exalted. And he's given a name that no other person's going to have. And at that name, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that he is the master. So we have to make sure we keep him in that position, because our accomplishment is to that we exalt in the expectation, our hope, of the esteem of Elohim, or the glory of Elohim. Verse 3. And not only this, but we also exalt in pressures, knowing that pressures work endurance. So listen, you may not want it, but it's okay. Go through it. Sometimes we don't want the pressure, but pressure works in us something for the greater cause or the greater good. At the time, we don't see it. At the time, we don't like it. But the pressure's for a reason. It works in us the endurance. It's just like when you first start working out. When you start working out and you get on the treadmill and maybe you're walking and you start walking, you go over the first mile and you go, man, you almost finished that mile. You're watching the clock on there and you're tempted to stop because you're so tired just doing 1 mile. And then you keep doing, the next day you get on, you're doing a mile again. Then the next day you're doing a mile and a quarter and a mile and a half. And see what it's working? It's pressure, but what is it working? Endurance. Now you're at 2 miles. Now you're at 3 miles. Now you're at 4 miles. Pressure works endurance. If you stop, you're going to be back at square one. And so going through whatever it is, it doesn't matter what it is, you got to understand that the pressure is working in you endurance. He says, not only this, but we also exalt in pressure, knowing that pressure works endurance, and endurance approvedness, and approvedness expectation. And expectation does not disappoint, because the love of Elohim has been poured out in our hearts by the set apart Spirit which was given to us. It's like a guarantee. You know there's going to be results. If you put the time in, there's going to be results. You have to put the time in. If you don't put no time in with God, you're going to get results one way or the other. You're getting results. It's either going to be a positive result or a negative result. You're going to have increased faith or decreased faith. Remember, Yeshua addressed people that had little faith. He said, why do you have such little faith? What was he trying to get them to understand? You're going through this to build endurance. And now you feel like I left you, but I'm here with you. But you're going through this. And then he talked about how some people had great faith. They just spoke such faith. They said, what great faith? He said, this is such great faith. And we see that terminology being used by Yeshua when he's addressing different people. And these were people that were followers of him that were at different levels in their life, but nonetheless, he was helping them grow in their faith. And expectation does not disappoint, because the love of Elohim has been poured out in our hearts by the set-apart Spirit which was given to us. So the love of God is poured in us by the set-apart Spirit. Now, when he says it's poured in us, he's not just putting a couple drops. A couple dabs will do you. It's nothing. He's pouring in his love by set-apart Spirit. He's trying to show that when he pours out his love, it's compelling. It's something that you're drawn into, and it's something that you desire and that you miss. When there's a lapse in for better judgment, you'll miss when he pours his love in you. And some of the things we see in these words here, as Paul, Shaul is addressing the Roman church, it's pretty interesting. He said, for when we were still weak, Messiah in due time died for the wicked. We were weak and wicked, but that didn't stop him from dying for us. He died for the weak and the wicked. And that was us. It wasn't what we were doing that propelled him to do what he had to do on the cross. What he did on the cross, he who knew no sin took sin on him. He looked at the greater cause and says, am I willing to actually take sin on and trust that the life that I lived would be successful enough to have sin just fall from me at death because it can't hold me? Am I willing to do that for the greater cause? And you know what Yeshua did? He looked at every person in the world and he said, I'll do it. It's worth it. The reason he died, because you were worth it. And you gotta trust yourself. You might not like you, but he likes you. And that's what you have to get over. Sometimes people can't get over the fact they don't like themselves, they don't like nobody else, but he likes you. And he's done that for you. And we'll see this when we read the text. You're going to see how beautiful it is when he speaks to the priest, because we do have a high priest who went through this, what we're talking about. So mostly what I'm going to be talking about, we relate to it through Yeshua, because he was our high priest that actually went through all of these steps that we'll find here in Leviticus. But first I got to get to Romans 5, which I think is going to take up most of the night. Verse 7, for one shall hardly die for a righteous one, though possible for a good one, some would even have the courage to die. But Elohim proved his own love for us in that while we were still sinners, Messiah died for us. He died for us while we were still sinners. We were actively sinning. He died for us. And you say, well, I wasn't around at that time, but you're here now, and his death still counts for you. Being an active sinner, he still dies. That's why you have to accept his death as that which covers your sin or removes it. If it wouldn't be for that, we'd all be in trouble. It's a powerful thing that's happened, and it takes faith. You have to believe that what he said and what he mentioned in his word is what he meant. You have to believe it as real fact. It don't make sense in your mind, but it makes all the sense when you look at it carefully and slow down and look at it. And that's what I prayed this week. Lord, I just want to slow down, and I want to look at this carefully. So I kept going over it and over it. And when I keep going over one chapter, I'm not going over the rest of the chapters. And so then I said, well, I got to go over the rest of them. So I went through all the chapters, and I went through all the chapters again. And then I went through the first chapter, and I said, man, this is too much stuff. This is so much stuff. But it's beautiful, the picture. I got the picture in my mind. It's just how I put it in words and explain it to you. And so I have the beautiful picture in my mind of what has happened for us. It's absolutely incredible. And by the grace of God, I'm going to deliver that to you between tonight and tomorrow. But Elohim proved his own love for us, and that while we were still sinners, Messiah died for us. Much more then, having now been declared right by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. We have to be saved from wrath. What's the wrath he's talking about here? The wrath is death. And death is an abomination to God. Death is not normal. It's not normal. It's abnormal. It's crazy. If you look through the lens of God, if you can look through the lens of God for 1 second, when he saw death, it's crazy, because he's all about life. There was never an intention from God when he created the universe and he made all the stuff that he made. He created everything he did in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. When he rested, there was no intention of death whatsoever. And when death entered the world, it became an abomination to him. And ever since then, he's been trying to fix it. And we're all mixed up in that. Every one of us are going to face death at some point in our life. And he's trying to get us to make sure we have the information we need to overcome death. You got to overcome death, because it's a reality. There's no doubt. Much more then, having now been declared right by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. Amen? We're going to be saved through wrath. I believe that. For if being enemies, we were restored to favor with Elohim through the death of his son, much more, having been restored to favor, we shall be saved by his life. So he's telling us, it's not, we're not restored to favor so we can all just have a good time. We're restored to favor so we can have the life that he now lives. The life that Yeshua now lives, we can have that life. But before we can have the life he now lives, we first have to live the life he lived to get that life. What was the life he lived before? A life without transgression. And the only way we can do that, we have to be taught those things. We have to go to the Word of God and let the Word of God express itself in us. And we have to actually follow his Word. When we do that, it's absolutely incredible. Verse 11, and not only this, but we also exalt an Elohim through our Master Yeshua Messiah, through whom we now have received the restoration to favor. We have all received the restoration to favor. Thank God we have received that. Now receiving that and actually living in that is two different things. We received it, but are we actually living in its fullness? That's where the problem lies. We're not living in its fullness. And how do we live in its fullness? Is the more we obey, the fuller it gets. The more we obey, the fuller it gets. The more we disobey, the less it gets. The more we disobey, the less it gets. And then we obey, the fuller it gets. We have to continue to obey, because when we don't obey, that's when we find ourselves in a lot of trouble. Verse 12, for this reason, even as through one man, sin did enter into the world and death through sin. How did death get here? Because it wasn't here. There was no mention of death. There was nothing close to death. But it entered because of one man sinned, then death entered through that sin. Because the word that he had was, if you eat of this tree, you shall surely die. You're going to die. But other than that, there was no possibility of him dying ever. He was created to live forever in harmony with God. That's how it was designed. That was God's design. And you think God's going to settle for a lesser design in the end? Now, how many want to make it in that design? Because we can. We have an example. Yeshua made it in that design. He made it through. And we can make it through if we follow what he says. But we have to actually follow what he says. For this reason, even as through one man did sin, did entered the world, and death through sin, thus death spread to all men because all have sinned. So how many here is going to die at some point in your life? All of us. So you see, we have a real problem now. At some point, we're all going to die, so we have a problem. Now, we got to have the assurance that we have life come back to us after death. Well, how do we get that assurance? Well, he tells us how to do it. He says, for until the Torah, sin was in the world, but sin is not reckoned when there is no Torah. Before the Torah, for until the Torah, sin was in the world, but sin was not reckoned when there is no Torah. You won't even know if you've done wrong, because there's nothing that tells you that's wrong. You don't know if you've done right because there's nothing tells you that's what pleases God. There's nothing that tells you that's what God likes. You have no idea. So without instructions, we don't even work. What happens when you get something brand new and you don't know nothing about it and it didn't have no instructions? You don't even know how to turn it on. There's no button. There's no visible button. You turn it, you're flipping it, you're shaking it, you're throwing up and down, you throw it on the ground. Nothing's working. You say, well, man, this is worthless. It's brand new. You just got it in the mail, but there was no instructions. You have no idea what to do with it. But when there's a manual that comes with it and it says, listen, what you got to do is twist the arm three times up and twist the right wrist to the left and twice to the right, and the thing comes on. You go, man, this is neat. This is I can get what this is going to help me with. I can actually use it. But if not, you won't know what to do. But he gave instructions on how to fix it. And we have to follow those instructions. And we have to be careful that we don't water down his instructions and eliminate the stuff he says because we don't like how God speaks. We don't like how God's not, he's hard. God is so hard. There have been many of smart men, many of men that's been brilliant, that have made statements in their autobiographies. I've read some of them, and you don't even want to repeat some of the stuff they said about God. Because in their opinion, God was rude. One guy starts out, God was rude, and he's uncaring, unloving. He called him a few words that was can't be repeated. This is in his quote, autobiography quote. I'm like, okay. I wonder how it's going to turn out for him. Because we don't like God because he sets the order of instructions, and we don't care the way he did things. Because there's some things that God sets in his Torah that on all accounts is pretty bizarre in modern day life. But is it okay that he's God and you're not? And he can say whatever he wants to say, and if we're going to follow him, believe that he's the one, give us a redeemer to get us out of the trouble we're in, that trouble's death, which he says is an abomination to him. So if you're susceptible, if you're in death and you have no way out of your death and you die with no way out, you're an abomination to God. He can't help you. But if you have the helper there to help you through it, even in death, he can rescue from that. And that's what his goal is. That don't show me a God that's rude, but one that's caring and one that's considerate and realizes that we're going to go through things in life that, because sometimes we feel like God's just out of touch. He's out of touch. He has no idea what we're going through down here. And that's how we think about God. We think about God as somebody that they were born rich. They have no idea how the poor people have to suffer. How you gotta want for things, how you gotta save for things. They have no idea. God's just, he's always had it, he's always been having it. And so he can't really feel what we're feeling. Well, when you start thinking in those terms, and you listen, shouldn't shock you. Millions and millions of people around the world think in these terms about God. That's their idea of what God is. And it's a terrible thing to be in, a terrible place, because when we don't consider the fact that when you read his word, all you see is him pouring himself out in love and care and concern and to make sure that he covers every detail. It seems like this is over the top, it's too much. But he covers all the detail to make sure we get it right. For this reason, even as though one man sinned, did enter the world, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men because all have sinned. For until the Torah, sin was in the world, but sin is now reckoned where there is no Torah. But death reigned from Adam unto Moshe, even over those who had not sinned according to the likeness of the transgressions of Adam, who is a type of him who was to come. Adam was a type of him who was to come. But the favorable gift is not like the trespass. For if by one man's trespass many died, much more the favor of Elohim and the gift in the favor of the one man, Yeshua Messiah, overflowed to many. It overflowed to many. Remember, he was pouring it out. He's pouring his love out. And what happens? He wants to pour so much love, he don't just stop when it hits the rim. He poured it till it overflows, so we have no excuse whether or not we make it or not. Because he's poured his love. He didn't just pour it out. He overflowed his love. And all we got to do is accept what he did. We have no excuse whatsoever if we become an abomination to him because we die without hope. No excuse. It's an amazing time to be alive right now. Amazing time. Does anybody go back and look at some of the Easter services that was produced this past Easter? Did anybody go look at that? Let me tell you. The reason I asked you to go look at it, because I want you to see what's happening in church around the world, in the United States and other countries, and what's happening here. And you're going to be shocked. Because we have taken the very thing that God's using for life. There's one church in particular, I'll just tell you about it, and I may do a clip and run it tomorrow morning for you to see. But they put a woman as Christ crucified to be all inclusive. And they announced that they're going to do that. And so the pastor says, well, this year we're going to do something different for Easter. Okay. Pastor, well, how far are we going to go? He said, we're going to go so far, we're going to go right to the edge of sin and stop. Just this side of sin, we're going to stay. We're going to actually rub shoulders with sin, but we're going to stop. We're not going to go over. Well, I want to tell you, not only did they go over, they indulged in it. And it's the number one thing happening in the internet world of that particular service that happened, this because it happened just happened during Easter services that just happened. And to treat God with that disrespect and all in the name of Yeshua, it's crazy. And to think that we're crazy is puzzling. It really is. It baffles me. I can't even explain it. You have to see it for your own eyes to see. Some of the stuff I can't relate to because I don't know the songs. But you're familiar with Maverick City, right? Who's familiar with Maverick City? It's all connected. And on all accounts, they got some good songs, you know, and it's a lot of people. And you know why they draw so many people? Because anything goes. It don't matter if he's with him or she's with her. It doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, the one quote was, the pastor got up and says, you know, I know God said he made male and female, but I'm to the opinion that I'm asking God, Lord, you don't have anything in between? Because I don't know. He said, I don't know. I think there should be something in between, God. And then produce that Easter program. You can tell that's what it leads to. It's never enough because your flesh wants all of it. It wants to take control. And the enemy comes and he feeds lies. He bombards your mind with lies and deception. And you're never satisfied no matter what happens. You can come here, even if we had every seat filled in here, it wouldn't do any more good for you than what's happening right now because your living for God is not contingent upon many people. It's contingent upon you solely saying, I'm going to live for God no matter what happens to anybody around me. I'm going to love him because he loved me. He gave himself for me. It's not contingent upon anything else. I'm going to live for God because he's been so good to me and it's so amazing that he would care for me to not leave me in an abomination state like death. Because it's all about getting us out of death. And we know because of one man sin entered the world, and after that death entered the world and it was passed on to all men. There's not one person that it didn't get passed on to. And we need help from that. If we don't get help from that, we're in trouble, all of us. We're not going to get out. And the favorable gift is not as by one having sin. For indeed the judgment was of one to condemnation, but the favorable gift is of many trespasses unto righteousness. For if by the trespass of the one death did reign through the one, much more those who receive the overflowing favor of the gift of righteousness shall reign in life through the one Yeshua Messiah. Don't focus on how many trespass. We know there's a lot of sin in the world. It sins every day. Every day it's just sin, 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 sin. It's every day. It never stops. But guess what? Let me tell you what else doesn't stop. That same blood that flowed down Calvary's cross still flows today. It never stops. It's overflowing, he says. And the righteousness, that the righteous life that Yeshua lived, it don't stop. It's continually going. He's still the high priest, the only one who can go into the most set apart place of all. And there he is He presents it for you and I. He's the only one. It's still happening today. And we have to recognize that. We have to recognize there was one who paid the price in full. And he's in the most set apart place, the most set apart place. He's there and he intercedes on our behalf. He's actually doing the service that needs to be done. And if it wouldn't be for that high priest who took on that role and that task, there would be no hope for none of us. There was not enough animals in the world. You could kill them all. It would not satisfy Jehovah. Would not satisfy him. Because that blood can't fix it. But Yeshua's blood can fix it. That's why I can't figure out, you know, people make mistakes in life. People make mistakes. I was sitting down today. Matter of fact, I was on the lawnmower. And I was thinking about this. I was just thinking about it, just going over it in my mind. Thinking about tonight. Thinking about tomorrow. And I was thinking about how we fall in the dirt. And so you're dirty. Everybody sees it. Everybody's pointing out. You look, you're full of dirt. Why you? But you can stay in the dirt or you can get up. And what gets you up is you got to recognize what he did. This was the cause. He paid it in full. And so you got dirty. And he wants to clean you up, but you got to let him do it. And it just bothers me so much how people, the devil lies to people. He tells them lies that there's no truth in it. He says, you messed up. It's too big this time. There's no way out hope for you. There is hope. When you look at what Yeshua has done, there is hope. But we got to tell people that. We got to let them know. And so, I messed up 2 or 3 times. So what? You messed up 2 or 3 times. There's hope for you when you realize what he's done for you. It's the favorable gift is overflowing. I kept reading that. And I was like, God, this is absolutely incredible. Because we read it, we don't comprehend it sometimes. We don't really get it. It's overflowing what happened for us. And there is a way. It may not seem like there's a way, but there is a way. And the only reason Yeshua died, he didn't die for those who were right. He died for the sinners like you and I. He died for the ones who fell in the dirt and they got the mud all over them. Get them up out of there and clean them off. And they fall in it again. Get them out again. Because what he did it for all of us. Amen. For if the trespass of one, death did reign through the one, much more those who receive the overflowing favor of the gift of righteousness shall reign in life. Not in death, we reign in life. Amen? We try to lead from death to life. We reign in life through the one, Yeshua Messiah. So then, as through one trespass there resulted condemnation to all men, so also through one righteous act there resulted righteousness, righteous declaring the life to all men. How many see there's opposing factors here? Sin brought death, but the life of Christ lived brought life. What he lived, because he followed the instructions of Yehovah, it brought life. And they're opposing each other. They're butting heads constantly. And I don't know about you, but I want life. You may not have it all perfect. You might have some isms and some schisms. You might have some issues that you're still going through, but you got to desire life. If you desire life, you can obtain it. You can get there if you really desire it, but you got to desire something in your heart that you got to desire. For as through the disobedience of one man, many were made sinners, so also through the obedience of the one, many shall be made righteous. You see this? There's a disobedience factor and obedience factor. My question when I read that, I was like, what are you being disobedient to? And what you're being obedient to? What is the two? What is that? It's his word. You're either going to obey it or you're going to disobey it. If you obey it, you got that life coming. And it's overflowing through Yeshua. If you disobey it, death still remains. There's nothing to get you out of it. We it's proof. We all live in proof. Right as we sit here, we're aging. We're all a few minutes older than we were when we got here. Every one of us, we're aging. We're dying daily, on a daily basis. And let me tell you something. We have to embrace what he's accomplished for us. Because this life that he's speaking of, it reigns over death. It swallows death up. Death has no sting and death has no victory. That's what happened with Christ. It's the same thing going to happen with you. Oh, death, where is thy sting? Oh, grave, where is your victory? They have none when you follow the correct method to obey. They have no power, has no authority. Verse 20, and the Torah came in beside so that the trespass would increase. The more you read, the more you go, am I right? Isn't that how it works? You read more, you say, man, I ain't doing this. Because it comes in beside so the trespass can increase. So we got to see our need for him. He's the deliverer. If you don't see your need for deliverance, guess what? You'll live in trespass. You see no need for deliverance. But where sin increases, what else increases? Favor increases still more. Sin is going to increase when you read the Torah. And that's why somebody said, I'm not even going to read it, so I won't have an increase of sin. You still got sin, you just don't know you got it. But when you read the Torah, you know that the sin that you have, how somebody can take it away from you if you read it all, because where sin abounds, grace does much more abound. That's what he's telling us here. He says, and it's, when you read the Torah, guess what? Sin is going to abound. That's just the natural thing that happens. Because we didn't even know until we read it, and then you start reading, go, man, I wasn't doing none of that. I was eating whatever I wanted. I was doing whatever. I wasn't keeping Shabbat. I wasn't doing none of that. Sin, what happens when you're saying all that? Man, I was meaning to tell me what happened. It was abounding. Sin was abounding in your life. But then when you read about the outpouring of this favor, he overflows in you. You realize that it abounds even more. Because you're not going to get one without the other. You can't go through the Torah and not see the amazing work that Yehovah has done through Yeshua to have us all have victory over death. And that's the goal. Amen. To have victory over death. Verse 21. So that as sin did reign in death, even so favor might reign through righteousness to everlasting life through Yeshua Messiah our Master. Wow. What a chapter. I wish I could have sat in chapter 5 of Romans the whole two services, because it's worth it. But then I wouldn't be able to go through none of Leviticus. But I couldn't start. There's no way I could start this one without reading Romans 5. No way. Because it gets into some stuff that you scratch your head. Say, what is this? When you read Romans 5, now you got something to hang everything on. Now Leviticus chapter number 21. Let's begin. This Torah portion is 31 and more, Hebrew for speak. In verse 1, and Yehovah said to Moshe, speak and more. To the priest. To who? The priest. We're not talking about the children of Israel. We're talking about the priest. Speak to the priest, and he specifies what priest? The sons of Aaron, and say to them. So we know it was Aaron. We knew it was Nadab and Abihu, Ithamar and Eleazar. We know it was four of them. So he's now speaking to Aaron and his two sons left. And they're going to do the same for their children. They're going to have children. They're going to have wives and have children and so forth. But there are strict rules when it comes to those who stand in the office of the priest pertaining to that high priest office. And the upper echelon of the priest service, which was different than the common priest that did stuff in the courtyard. We'll see that. He says, speak to Aaron, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, no one is to be defiled for the dead among his people. Why? How hard is that a man can't be defiled if it's his family member? No one is to be defiled for the dead. Why is God speaking this against the dead? Because death is what to God? An abomination. It's not normal. It's abnormal. It's crazy. When you look at how God looks at death, when he sees death, he don't like it at all. Why? Because he's all about life. And so all the death that's happening all over the world, there's murder being committed, there's senseless killings, there's abortions, all of that is how you think, what do you think God's looking at? He's been looking at this for a long time, and he's looking at it. These people don't care. At some point, he's going to flip the switch. This script's going to be over, it's going to turn the page, and we're going to be in the next chapter. At some point. How do we know that? The Word tells us that. We don't know when that's going to be, but God knows when it's going to be. And we're to be as in tune with him as possible. We possibly can. And so he's talking about the dead, except for his relatives. But not all relatives. Let me show you how precise this is. Who are nearest to him? For his mother, for his father, for his son, for his daughter, and for his brother. Just because it's his mother, father, daughter, son, and brother doesn't mean he's still not defiled. He's still defiled. But he can go around them being dead, but he's defiled. He's got to do something to get that defilement off of him before he goes back in the presence of Jehovah. Because God, he doesn't like death at all. He don't want to be in the presence of death. That's why Yeshua said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because at that point, God turned and had to forsake him because he was going to die. He death is an abomination. And he knew he was dying to death, and he knew what he was going to do soon after that death. But nonetheless, God couldn't be close to that. It makes more sense, don't it? We learn some things just reading Leviticus. We learn a lot of things. Now, except for his relative, now, and for his maiden sister. Why maiden sister? Because if she wasn't a virgin, he can defile himself for his maiden sister. If she wasn't a virgin, if she was married, it's over. She got a husband. Let him deal with her death. That's how God looks at it. She's got another head in her life. Let him deal with her. But as far as this priest is concerned, if his sister was unmarried and still at home and she died, he can defile himself for the sister if she was a maiden. Now, again, the word emphasis is the maiden, the virgin sister. She didn't defile herself with nothing else. Who has no husband, so he's explaining it, for her, he is defiled. Now notice that everything, your mother dies, you're going to go to the funeral, it's just the right thing to do in our society, right? But God says you do it, you're defiled. But I'm going to allow that. For your father, if he dies, you go to the funeral, I'm going to allow that. But for somebody else, I won't allow it. There's a whole set of different procedures you have to do in order to come back to me if you get around death that I disapprove of. We're talking about the priest now. Now we're going to have a priest that's going to come in that fashion, and he's explaining this for us. He's trying to help us understand these principles, these values, because they're important to us. Now he says, a leader does not defile himself among his people to profane himself. A leader does not defile himself among his people to profane himself. Now, this leader that he's talking about is still speaking to the priest, because that's the one that's considered the leader among the people, that high priest. They do not make any bald place on their head. Still speaking to the priest now. No bald spot on your head. Why was he against that? Because that was a practice that the pagans practiced. So the mother died. You to express your mourning, you would make a bald spot on your head. You would cut a patch of your hair off. God said, don't do that. Don't make a bald place on their head, and they are not to shave the corners of their beard. Because what they would do, when somebody would die, they would take the sideburn off, all the way to maybe to here. They would remove it. And anybody that was like that, that basically looked like they had a goatee, they would say, well, they must be mourning for the dead. That was automatic. And God said, don't do that. I want you to have the full beard. You're a priest unto me. So God's given a requirement. So the one that's the high priest, he says, this is what you look like. This is how you conduct yourself. This is how your disposition is. You stay within this perimeter. Now, this is as serious as everything he gave him so far. You can go in and you're going to die if you don't listen to God. But you can defile yourself when it comes to your relatives. But anybody else, you can't even do it. I don't want you to get near death. Can you imagine if we had this actively working today, this same process? People would be offended. Do not make any bald place on the head, and they do not shave the corners of their head, their beards, and they do not make a cutting in their flesh. That was another practice. When somebody would die, they would make a mark on their flesh and say, that's mama, that's daddy, that's my brother, that's my sister. That's just what it was done. God says, I don't want you to practice that. The pagans do that. Don't practice that. You're going to come before me. He don't better not have no cuttings on you. Because the moment you're cutting yourself, now you're unclean before him. It's there forever. You're unclean. He's going to get into some things. If you have a mark on you, if you're hunchback, if you have your testicles have been damaged, you can't be. You're eliminated out of that office. This is serious. So he definitely don't want you to self-induce these things on yourself. If you're born this way, you're eliminated from that. You can't do it. Because he says, let me tell you, the whole thing that we boils down to, people want God to somehow diminish his glory, to come down and live at a lower level of glory so we can all get along. And he won't do that. He's going to maintain his glory, and we all got to come up to where he's at. When you look into my glory, you'll be instantly changed. And when I looked into that, I seen that God's glory, he's not going to give it up for nobody and for no reason. We got to get there. We got a long road to go. We better get started. And that's what we started. If you want to know how this all started, I've been saying this the whole time. It's not been a secret. God's going to stay here, and we better get there. And the only way to get there, we got to fluff off all the religious garbage and all the man-made traditions, and we got to start getting to where he's at, because he's not going to come down to where we are. And to help us along the way, he sent his only son to take us by the hand and to do that. Because the one thing Yeshua did, he said, if you saw me, you saw the Father. He proved that he didn't want God to diminish himself in the slightest. So you think it was hurtful to Yeshua that he said, Father, why have you forsaken me? It might have hurt him emotionally as a person. Naturally, that's going to hurt you. The very people that you trust and you love, and they turn away from you. But he knew he wasn't expecting God to keep looking, because he knew death was not normal to God. So he didn't. It was no over expectation that God somehow was going to diminish himself in the slightest little bit to say, oh, look at my poor son. Look what they're doing to him. None of that happened. Death, he turned away from it because I don't want to even see it. But the consequences now is those who don't go to him through his son, he's going to reject. Period. He'll reject you because he's not going to let his son die for nothing. So when you read these verses, you start seeing these links. And let me tell you, does it help that we read Romans 5 now? That we see what actually happened? How did death actually get here? Because we have all sinned. We've all come short of the glory. And death entered the world. And now we've got to deal with death. Well, God's helping us deal with it. So he's telling the priest, you got to deal with death differently than regular people. No cuttings in the flesh. Verse 6. And they are set apart to their Elohim, and they do not profane the name of their Elohim, for they bring the fire offering to Yehovah and the bread of their Elohim and shall be set apart. He said, the reason I'm telling you to do this, there's a reason behind it. The reason is you're the one bringing the fire. When you bring the fire, you got to act different. Nadab and Abihu, they brought the fire, and it was the wrong fire. They didn't get this, and they paid dearly for it. When you bring the fire, you got to make sure that you act different. Listen, I have no expectations of the people in this church to ever get it the same way that I'm getting it. But there's a different expectation that God requires of me. And he's demanded on my life. And so I don't have some expectation that I'll, and that don't mean you can't. You can all get there. But I have no expectation of that. My expectation is to see you grow in the Lord and to progress in God, at least see some effort from you. That's the whole goal, to show that you're trying to get this. But you don't ever try to think, well, I need to try to get it like him. Don't try to reach for something that God is not expecting you to reach for. He's talking to the priest here. He says, you bring the fire, you act different. You conduct yourself different. And if I'm no different, if you put us in a room and the situation pops up and I'm not acting any different, you got to question that. And I pray to God that I've acted different and at least shown you that there's got to be some standard that we have, or we'll fall for anything. We'll do anything. We have to have a different standard in our life. And it don't matter. You can get mixed up. You can be in the workplace. You can be in the work environment. That's no excuse for how we conduct ourselves and how we handle things. None whatsoever. We don't get there's no free pass because you're the pastor. There's no free pass. There's a high demand. You bring the fire and you bring the bread of Elohim. And when I speak of the bread of life, I don't take that lightly. The bread, and Yeshua said, hey, I'm the bread of life. I am the bread of life. We're not talking about the bread of death. We're talking about the bread of life. We're talking about the very thing you can consume and eat that cancels death out. We need death canceled. Because this is all about life and death. He said, listen, I set before you life and death. I'm telling you, choose life. What did he say? Choose life, because he's not about death. But it's set before us. Why is it set before us? Because one man sinned. He lost the glory. He lost that relationship with God. It was gone forever. And until Yeshua came and fixed it, there was not enough animals in the world to get it back for us. Because the Torah was never designed to get us in right standings with God. Never was it. Only the blood can fix it. Because our sin is still on us. And because sin is still on us, what does sin do when it comes to death? It holds on to you, keeps you down. But where the sin has been removed, then the death can't hold anymore. It has no grip. Let me give an example. I'm going to get to it here in a little bit, but it comes to my mind. I better not pass it on and not say it now. There was a lady by the name of Corrie Ten Boom. How many ever read Corrie Ten Boom's book? She had a book out. How many has never read it? How many has never heard of the lady? She was a Christian lady who during German war and the Nazis against the Jews, she saved thousands of Jews by hiding them. She's got a book called The Hiding Place. If you want to read it, it's really good. But she believed that God called her to help save the Jews. And she hid many of them, about 100. She built hiding places in her house, fake doors. And she was brilliant. And she prayed. She believed God. She was put in prison. She just believed God. They didn't care if she'd kill her. She didn't care. And her own family members would die. They died in the concentration camp. She didn't care. She knew there was the wrong what they were doing, and she wasn't the military, but she was a believer in Yeshua, and she said, I'm gonna help as much as I can. So she'd hide thousands of Jews. So the people would come there and they say, we don't know if you have any Jews here. She said, nope. Now that was a what? A lie. Now just so you know, there's no place in the Torah that a lie is ever good. Not one place. A lie is wrong all day long in the Torah. We don't find a place where sometimes it's okay to lie. Now there's some laws that you can break them for something else, but not a lie. Now even though she was helping lives, she was telling a lie to help them. You would think, I would think, well, God smile on her. But to God, she was still a liar. But let me tell you what she was banking on. She believed in Yeshua. And she knew that if she told a lie, Yeshua could could cover that lie and we could have the life saved. And I'm going to risk my defilement because I know whom I believe in. And that's why she was able to do it and to be so successful, because she was willing to risk her defilement because she knew there was a fix for it. In Yeshua, we all have a fix. Outside of Yeshua, we have no fix. Now, does that mean because she had a fix that her sin was, it was not a sin? Does that mean that because she did that, do we get rid of that Torah when it says don't lie? We don't get rid of that. It was still the Torah. It's still a law that's broken. But because there was a fix for it, she was willing to defile herself for the moment to fix the life. But without that fix, that lie was forever before her. And it would have been wrong. Do you understand that? God sees it as a lie. But she had something to fix that lie for. That was the blood of Yeshua that cleanses her. And so his blood covered that lie, and she was willing to be defiled for the moment to save the life of the people. And you think about the priest. The priest, he's going to be defiled for the moment, but there's got to be something to fix it for him. And in this case, there was different rituals that he had to perform. If he was defiled for his mother's death, it's up to him. He had to choose it. But God's telling me, I allow you to be defiled for your mother. I allow you to be defiled for your father and for your sister if she's a maiden. She's married, let her husband do it. That seems a bit, you know, it's not so, not, he's not being real thoughtful there. It's his sister. God said if she's married, let her husband bury her. Don't get defiled for a married sister. Or your brother, I'll let you be defiled for him. But just so you know, you're defiled. Meaning he can't go before the, he can't go into the holies of holies. He can't go into the set apart place. Can't do it no more. Can't go there. Because it's not allowed. Because he's defiled. And so we see that language. And so when I first read 21, I was just taken by the whole language here. But when you go back over and you kind of settle in and start seeing all these wonderful principles, how he lines it all together, it's absolutely beautiful. Then he goes a little bit further here. They do not take a woman who is a whore or a defiled woman. They do not take a woman put away from her husband, for he is set apart unto his Elohim. So the priest couldn't marry a divorced woman. Now, maybe her husband died and she was free and clear. He still couldn't marry her because there were different rules for the priest. I don't want you to marry a prostitute, one who's defiled themselves. Now, the reason it's two different wordings here, because a woman could be defiled, maybe has sexual immorality acts once or twice. That don't mean she's a whore. But nonetheless, the priest couldn't have her. He could only marry a virgin. Why? Because God said. Because he's got to go before Yehovah. And anytime he comes into union with somebody who's in that position, he's going to bring that in with them. It's going to be brought in together, and he's going to be in trouble. So again, we have all these added things that have to do with the priest's office. It's absolutely incredible. Verse 8. And you shall set him apart, for he brings the bread of your Elohim. He is set apart to you. For I, Yehovah, setting you apart, am set apart. For I, Yehovah, I read this one last week because this is one of our go-to verses in 21, chapter 21. I want you to be the set apart because I'm set apart. I don't want you to think I'm going to diminish my set apartness to match your set apartness. I'm telling you, your set apartness has to match my set apartness, because you're going to come in and bring the bread. You're going to bring the bread of life. And so Because, I mean, he's bringing bread to God. And again, this word is lechem. This word, and this is for all types of different food. This is not, but the main reason they use this term, because the majority of Israel's food was bread. It was bread. And so, did God eat bread? Because he says, you bring the bread of Elohim, or the food of Elohim. It's not what it's saying. Again, remember, let's get the spiritual significance. We're going to stand. As I'm standing here, I'm bringing the bread before Elohim. And if I don't do what I'm supposed to be doing, then I'm going to find there's going to be trouble with that. When you can't figure out the difference between why God makes male and female, and somehow you think there should be in between, that type of bread bringing before Elohim, man, that's scary business. This is actually being said, this is nowadays modern terminology coming from the pulpits in the United States of America. It's crazy. Verse 9. And when the daughter of any priest profanes herself by whoring, she profanes her father. This is the key verse that I was talking about earlier. She is burned with fire. Why? Because she didn't honor her father. She's an extension of her father. And if she's found to be whoring, she just brought a bad name against her father. She dishonored him. She basically cursed him by her act. She should be burned with fire. You think it's important? Do you really think it's important that we honor father and mother? So we read it in the Ten Commandments and we don't get the concept. We really don't. We think we're going to be nice to them. We're going to do a few things for them. And that's the level we carry. We don't carry it any deeper than that. But God carries it so much deeper. How you conduct your adult life matters to God when it pertains to father and mother. How you conduct your adult life, the things you get involved in, and how you participate in activities, and what you're doing is a direct connection to father and mother. Well, I'm an adult, I'm big enough to do what I want. You're right, you can do whatever you want. I'm just telling you what God says. Especially if that father is in the office of the priest. He said that daughter should be burned with fire. Not just killed, not just die. It's a different level. Burn with fire. Wow. You read these verses, you say, well, I don't understand that. I'm just going to move on. And the high priest, among his brothers, on whose head the anointing oil was poured, and who is ordained to wear the garments, does not unbind his head nor tear his garments. We're talking about still with the dead. Remember, the oil wasn't put on all the priests, but only on the high priest was the oil put on. We got to go back and read that. Go back and read those verses. He's very clear to say where the oil goes. The one the oil was put on, he says, you tell him he don't unbind his head or tear his garments. I don't care who died. It makes no difference. He's not to mourn that away because God is all about life. He is actually representing me there, and we don't find Yeshua participating in none of these things, none of these activities. Yet Yeshua could walk to a coffin going out of name, and there the coffin goes out, and he speaks life. Yes. He constantly spoke life. He didn't speak death. He didn't allow the death to continue on because he was all about life because he was representing his father well. So we see the activities of Yeshua actually playing these things out. When you read this, you look at Yeshua's life and you go, man, this guy wasn't just great. He was absolutely amazing. He was absolutely incredible, the life he lived, because he lived these things out to his fullest. And this continues to go on in the next chapter, and it goes on in the 23. We see Yeshua. All the information we have about Yeshua is him participating in these feast times. He was always there. He was always there. And when they for Passover, he wasn't only there, he was it. For unleavened bread, he wasn't only there, he was unleavened. The unleavened was being drawn out to him in the grave. And the first fruits, when the stone was rolled away, that he was all of these things embodied, literally happened. And so when it comes to us participating in the very thing that Yeshua fulfilled, and we say, we don't have to do that no more, we got these other holidays. Man, I have to put that into question. I really do. That you can have the knowledge of what Yeshua did and still not want to do it, it blows my mind. And people are adamant, I don't want to do it. Okay. That's fine. But there's a price to pay for that. Verse 11. Nor come near any dead body, nor defile himself for his father or his mother. Now, this high priest, he can't defile himself for his father or his mother. This would God rather. Now, he will allow you to be defiled, but what he'd rather you do, not do it at all. Why is God continually, adamantly speaking of these things? Because of the position between what God has and how he looks at life, he disdains death. It's a disdain to him. And he says it's an abomination. It's not normal. Death is not normal. As God views everything, anything that dies is not normal. I don't care if that's animals, humans, or trees, or plants, or grass. None of it is normal to God. Because when he made it, it was to stay forever. Can you imagine our whole entire universe is dying? Everything that God created is dying. And God says, man, it's terrible. That's why he's going to have to really do it over again. At the very end, he makes it all over again, and it's to remain forever and ever, for eternity. It's beautiful. Nor go out of the set-apart place, nor profane the set-apart place of his Elohim, for the sign of dedication and the anointing of all of his Elohim is upon him. I am Jehovah, and let him take a wife in her maidenhood, a widow, or one put away, or a defiled woman, or a whore. These he does not take, but a maiden of his own people he does take as a wife. So certain ones he can't have, no matter if he takes a liking to them or it seems to be right in everybody else's eyes, God says you don't do it. He does not profane his offspring among his people, for I am Jehovah who sets him apart. And Jehovah spoke to Moshe saying, speak to Aaron saying, no man of your offspring throughout their generation who has any defect is to draw near to bring the bread of his Elohim. No one is to draw near who brings the bread. For any man who has a defect is not to draw near. A man blind or one lame or disfigured or deformed. Any kind of deformity or disfigurement, he's eliminated from the priesthood. It just so happens he don't get to do it. God's not going to make exceptions. He's not going to make excuses about it. He says, don't do it. A man who has a broken foot or a broken hand, well, it's going to heal at some point. God said he's eliminated. He might heal. He might still be able to use it, but I always know it was broken. Or is a hunchback or a dwarfed, a man who has a defect in his eyes. That means if he has cataracts, that's a defect in your eye. He's eliminated. Eczema, skin disease, or scab, or as a eunuch. No man among the offspring of Aaron the priest who has a defect is to come near to bring the offering made by fire unto Jehovah. He has a defect. He does not come near to bring the bread of his Elohim. He does not eat the bread of his Elohim, both the most set apart and the set apart, only he does go near the veil, does not go near the veil to approach the slaughter place because he has a defect. Lest he profane my set apart place, for I am Jehovah who set them apart. Thus Moshe spoke to Aharon and his sons and to all the children of Israel. So what we see in this first chapter 21, that God will never and has never diminished his set apartness, so our set apartness can kind of, he can be at our level. He's always telling us what we have to do in order to get there, not what he's going to do to come here. And that's just a false a belief system. Somehow God had to diminish himself to become a human God, both a God-man, and so he can kind of hang out with us and see what we're really going through so he can understand us, really. Like he's got to figure out what we're going through. He knows what we're going through. He knows everything about us. He took dust. Remember that. He took dust and he breathed the Ruach HaKodesh in dust and it animated. Why would he have to diminish himself and become a God man to come hang out with us so he can figure out what kind of emotions we have? He knows all about us. He knows everything about us. He needs to maintain his sphere of holiness and his sphere of set apartness and his sphere of glory. He needs to maintain that. If he maintains that, then he says, I'm going to get you here. And the way you get here is through the Son. You get here through Messiah. That's what he did for all of us. And so hopefully we can grab hold to these principles and they can become alive in us to the fullest extent. And so should we continue to go on? How much time are we looking at? Well, we got 8 minutes. We might as well do some verses. Verse 20, chapter 22, verse 1. And Jehovah spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to Aharon and his sons that they separate themselves from the set-apart offering of the children of Israel, and that they do not profane my set-apart name in what they set apart to me, I am Jehovah. Now, just so everybody knows, chapters 21 and 22 are running together. The only reason we separate them, because for people to find them to read and we break them up, there's no difference in the theme. There's no difference in the idea. Chapter 22 is basically, again, continuing the same effort to show how important it is that we recognize that God is set apart and his set apartness is something that we have to match to. And we know that Yeshua matched his set of set apartness. That's why he put him at his own right hand. Highly exalted him. I can't say that enough. Highly exalted him. And the same thing he wants to do for us. But in order for that to happen, we're going to have to separate ourselves from a lot of the nonsense that is around us. Verse 2-3. Say to them, any man of all your offspring throughout your generations who draws near to the set-apart offerings, which the children of Israel set apart to Jehovah, while he has uncleanness upon him, that being shall be cut off from before me, I am Jehovah. So he's given the consequences of this actually happen. If he's got uncleanness on him, that being shall be cut off. Now notice that God allows some things, but what he allows, he still wants you to know, because I allowed it doesn't mean it didn't defile you. You're defiled. You got to get something to fix that defilement. And in order for that to happen, we know there was a procedures of those who were defiled. They had to sometimes bathe in water, sometimes wash their garments, or be unclean until evening. There was all sorts of things we learned through those Torah portions. But he wants us to know that when we choose to do it, we are defiled. And there's only one way. Now, if you approach without doing these things, you approach unclean, you can be cut off from the people. Again, we looked at the word cut off. It has a variation of meanings. It could mean that you're on a lifelong ban. Lifelong. For the rest of your life, you put out and there's no coming back. Cut off could be even death, because it carries that with it. But it also means that not only you, but your children's children and their children, till your seed is completely cut off. It can mean also that. till you quit procreating. There's nobody in your family can procreate no more because you're cut off. So what we do in our generation matters for the next generation. How we conduct ourselves matters. And how tolerable we want to be about certain things matters. It really matters. And what we live in a world today that wants to be tolerable about everything. We just got to be more considerate. You know, not everybody's where we are. We want to be tolerant about different circumstances and situations. I can tell you, it's scary the stuff that's happening in the world today when it comes to those who call themselves men of God, who stand before congregations of thousands of people, and everybody's up and shouting and dancing and having them a good old time while all of the garbage is being played right in front of them. It's absolutely, when you see this video I'm talking about, there's no difference than what happened at the Grammy Awards, that production, and in the church service on Easter Sunday morning. Because everybody's going to do what they're going to do. They're going to go all out for God. We want to do something different. We want to go all out for God. We're going to have this Easter production that's going to be wonderful. And the whole time, it's an abomination to God. And you know what? It's got to be called out. It's got to be something that's said about it. Especially after reading these verses here. Verse 4, any man of the offspring of Aaron who is a Zarat or Mitzorah or has a discharge does not eat the set apart offering until he is clean. He's got to be clean. Now, I talked about this when a priest gets Zarat, it could be costly. It could cost him a lot, especially being a priest. But once he recognized he had to get serious about it to get it cleared up. If not, it could cost him the priesthood. But he could get it cleaned up. So there's some things in our life sometimes if we just got it cleaned up. If not, it's going to cost us. There's some areas that we don't want to deal with, but we got to. You got to get it cleaned up. If you don't, it'll cost you. And that cost could be great. And many, many times it could be affecting many generations. We don't want that to happen. So if any of the offspring who is a leper who has a discharge does not eat the set-apart offering until he is clean. And whoever touches what is rendered unclean by a being or a man who has an emission of semen. So again, this emission of semen is linking the procreation side, which is the gift of what? Life. That's why it's linked here. It's the gift of life. And so he's explaining to us how he's serious. God is serious about life. And when it comes to death, can't stand death. He don't like death. He don't even want to talk about death because it's not in his vocabulary. That's not what God is about. He's not about death. He's about life. But death is very much part of our vocabulary, very much a part of Satan's vocabulary. It's very much a part of the world's vocabulary because a lot of stuff is, they do a whole celebration certain time of the year, and it's all about celebrating death. All about it. And when you have the Mass is celebrating death. You notice that there's a difference between Easter celebration and a Pesach. We celebrate nothing but life. That's all we're talking about, life. It's all about life. And first fruits, all about life. It's all about which was dead coming up. It's all about life, not about the death. We don't focus on the death. We don't have Christ Mass because it's all about death. The whole world's focused on death, and yet we have God saying, hey, focus on life, just life. Don't fool with death. Death is an abomination to me. It's about life. And so we start building doctrines and theology based on death, and it's sad. It really is. And then once we face death, we magically put everybody at life, just like that. Yeah. We don't focus about it when everybody's alive, but the moment anybody dies, I don't care who they are, we automatically, we automatically knight them into life. Their sainthood, there it is. And it's just not what the Word says. And so I guess I'm going to go ahead and stop right here, brother. We'll take it up again in the morning. I'll probably go through 22 fairly quick because I got to get to 23 at some point. And 24, you're going to be, there's no way to get through 23. It's too much going on in 23. Because the 23, Leviticus 23 talks about all the feasts. Talks about the appointed times. Talks about the days that God set apart. That he declared to be holy. And one is Shabbat. The reason you're here. And I have no idea in my mind. You'll never get me to be convinced. How is it that somehow not everybody sees that God set this time apart for himself. And he made it set apart. He made it set apart. This is before the Torah. This is before Moshe. This is before Abraham. This was in Genesis 2. He did everything in 6 days, and the seventh day he rested from all his work. And God set the day apart. And so it seemed like to me at some point everybody would say, you know what? I got it. I finally get it. I don't care what I got to do. It makes no difference. I'm going to set that day apart, and this is what I'm going to do. And how you conduct yourself. And he called it a gathering. It's a gathering. And if we're together, here we are. So for me not to give an opportunity for you to gather, we would be not following what Jehovah had asked us to do. So I'm going to give you that opportunity together. You can decide if you want to do it or not. It's up to you. But it's going to be real good in the morning because I'm going to go into some of them details. And I'm probably not going to touch none of the slides. I'm going to leave it up to you. But there's some stuff in there. There's some real controversial things. But nonetheless, it's what it is. And it's going to... You read through it, you'll see what I'm talking about. And you'll see the value of it. But there's some things we got to fix. And as we go along, we're going to fix those things. No matter what we did in the past, once we know, we fix it and we move on. But sometimes it's hard to break our habit of speech. It's hard to break our terminology. How many remember how hard it was to break off the terminology we had so set in? It's just what we did. We did it all the time. And you may not mean nothing by it, but as far as God looks at it, he's wanting us to do the best we can with what we know and at least make an effort. And if we make an effort, and what we see him telling the priest here, he was serious when he came to the priest's office because they stood before him and brought the fire and brought the bread. If you bring the fire and the bread, you have a different responsibility than regular folks. And so this is should be important to all of us. And I'm thankful that God gives us an opportunity to come and take it on one chapter at a time.